Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. The Live Your Edge podcast is where I interview 7- and 8-figure entrepreneurs, influencers, and successful business owners who in their own right were able to create a life on their own terms. We talk a lot about stepping out of your comfort zone, but what does it really mean to be in discomfort and how you can expand your so-called comfort zone by being able to constantly test and challenge yourself. Hello everyone, today we'll be speaking with Dale Dupree. Dale is the founder of the Sales Rebellion, basically an organization or a community for other people that are passionate about sales. So today we're gonna be talking a lot about how to sell effectively and how to sell properly, because there's a world out there, people are not using the correct sales principles and they are, you know, turning people off, they're pushing them away, they're giving salespeople a bad name. So in this episode, we talk about the ethical way to conduct business, to sell, because all companies require sales and you can't really avoid it. So join me in welcoming Dale Dupree. Hello everyone, welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. Today we are joined by Dale Dupree, the leader of the Sales Rebellion. Welcome to the show, Dale.
What's up, dude? Thanks for having me on. I'm very, very excited to be here today.
So we are actually on opposite ends of the world. I'm in Hong Kong, you're in Orlando, Florida. And it's a crazy world out there. And speaking of rebellion, it's like chaos, like, you know, in many parts of the world, not just in the US and all of that. And today in particular, I love to talk about sales because, you know, sales is something I started off my career in. It's something that I see as essential for those that are leaders, those that are entrepreneurs, and those pretty much anyone out there needs to sell themselves, need to sell their products, keep food on the table, to lead a movement and so forth. So walk us through your journey. Like, how did you stumble upon sales and what was the motivation that brought you to starting the Sales Rebellion?
Yeah, so I didn't stumble into sales. I was ushered into it, actually. And it was through intentional decision that my father took back in 1984 when he founded his business, which was a copier firm. And I was born a year later in 1985 with toner literally running through my veins. Like, the doctor said to my dad, dude, this is going to sound weird, but there's toner in this dude's blood. So, and really the reason that I mention it that way is because I like people to understand the legacy that I had from the very beginning of my walk, which is that my father didn't just start a business, you know, for his kids to take over. My father created a legacy in a very niche approach into his specific industry, and more importantly, became a pillar of his community more than anything. And because of those decisions and that intentionality around the business that he was building, you know, back so long ago that he spent 29 years running, the rest of us just kind of had, like, we just had an obligation to an extent to come back, you know, to like be a part of it to some capacity. And I think the big picture perspective is that it, not to say that every single kid that has a dad that they love, like I did with my father wholeheartedly, you know, has to go and run his or her business. Because it could be their mom as well too. That's the entrepreneur from that perspective. But what I am saying is that the lessons that my dad created and founded in those moments were the things that defined my walk. So when I went into music at 17 years old, I started playing shows more actively in the local area as a musician in a band. And then I did a tour, my first tour around the United States. It was 50 plus days. We set the whole thing up ourselves, very entrepreneurial-esque, right? And then every night I was selling this idea of this band that nobody had ever heard of before in these random states across the US. No matter how people perceive the way that we work in the United States, state by state, it's different. And, you know, you have a local community in your local city and your local state, right? So just because we were from Orlando, Florida, didn't mean that people were just going to know who we are. So we had to go out every night and sell ourselves, whether it was 10 kids or 10,000. That was our mindset, right? As a matter of fact, I remember playing at a small little bar called the Spider something. Somebody will call me after they hear this podcast and be like, I know exactly what that is. But it was in a little hole in the wall in Myrtle Beach. And it was the first time that we had ever played there. And we showed up, and instead of, you know, being rock stars and standing around and signing autographs, there was like five kids in the room, bro. And only two of them came to actually see us. But we didn't care. We played harder than you've ever seen a band play in their life. We mingled with the kids afterwards. We were wheeling and dealing like, hey, you want a shirt and a CD and a sticker for $20? Like, well, I'll give it to you for 15. I'll hook you up. You know, I mean, we were doing our thing, and we were out pushing product and pushing relationships more than anything. Next time we came back to that city, there was hundreds of kids at the show because of the reputation that we had built in that moment with those two people, and one of them being an influencer of his community. And so he could rally the troops, and he liked us, right? So I've been in sales my whole life is the bottom line here, right? But then I spent about 10 years at the first company. Three of those were with my dad when I came back from being a musician in 2007, 2008. And about the third, fourth year, he sold the company, and I was acquired by a larger firm. We were $1.5 million firm. We sold to an $8 million firm. When I got gobbled up by them, I became the number one sales rep pretty much overnight. Inside of the entire organization, all the established sales reps, I just kind of wiped it all clean, and I never looked back. I never stopped. Every year over year, I just continued to create my legacy, right? And to work harder than everybody else, to work smarter than everybody else, and to do it in the name of servant leadership to my community. And so I spent about 6-7 years over at that firm. And then I did an upward lateral move to another copier firm for about a year and a half. And that's when I got fed up, bro. I sat back and said, the way that the sales world works is bull, all of it. It's smears for the most part. It's manipulative over our buyer. The cultures are fake. They pretend to have a culture in the first place. Just because you put a ping pong table in the warehouse doesn't mean you have culture, right?
Yeah.
And the idea too of corporations saying, you know, we have a fun environment for people your age. Well, that's ageism is what that is, right? More than anything. That's you trying to take advantage of a younger generation to put, you know, some kind of facade on showing, look at our great, you know, culture that we have here, just because you want something out of them. You want them to come and do something for you in the glory of your money, right? It has nothing to do with your prospect. It has nothing to do with your clients. It has nothing to do with your community. And so I saw through those things, and I woke up one day and said, it's time for a rebellion. The sales rebellion was born. I've been doing it since March 1st of 2019. So we're a year and a few months old, but who's counting? And we are loving every step of the way. It started out with me and one other guy, my business partner. And we're up to about 14, 15 people at the organization at this point.
Wow. So what was that? You realized that, you know, the sales world has gone manipulative. And it's not really serving the end user. So what did you realize down the, you know, your 10 plus years of selling and even your lifetime of following under your father and joining his company and working in sales? How have you seen sales evolve, and what is something that hasn't yet changed or is changing right now, and you feel like that's the mission of your of the sales rebellion is to usher in this change when it comes to selling, right?
So I think that there's still a lot of work to be done, a ton of work to be done. But I believe that right now what we're seeing as far as changes, visibly seen as far as changes, are that we're watching a shift in mindset and attitude in sales representatives. Techniques and tactics still need a lot of work, because to me, like, most of the tactics, quote unquote, are outdated. And really, truly, they're just not buyer-centric. They're seller-centric. They're how do you get to the sale faster, right? We never talk about how do we accommodate the buyer. You know, if you buy one of the big gurus' online courses, the whole thing is about you. It's never about the outcome, right, that your buyer gets. It's just about you getting to the money the fastest way possible so you can build, you know, your business, right? And to me it is the never-ending story of sales is what it is. Is that every year, year over year, you chase the quota,
every single year, right? In 2019, when I founded the Sales Rebellion, I thought for sure I was going to be on the phone, dialing like crazy, you know, trying to find as much business as I possibly could. 99.9% of our business came to us because of the reputation that I had built for the last 14 years of being in the copier world and being a salesperson that was bigger than just a product. So it was very easy. There were people that I sold copiers to that I support and train in sales. There was other copier companies that heard that what I had done and said, you got to come over and do the same thing with us. Obviously we love what you do. Right. And for a whole year, this last year, I reaped the benefits and the rewards of what it was that I built over all that time. How? Because I stayed diligent, right? Because I wanted to give my prospects a reason for doing business with me and not just an excuse, right? Oh, he's the cheapest, so we went with him. I wanted to give them something that they could hold on to. I wanted to give them something that they could benefit from and that they could believe in as well too. So I created my own personal brand, like the Copier Warrior, right? You know, sales reps take too many shortcuts around personal branding as well too. They just use the company's letterhead and branding and just let it be, you know? Or we even, for our coaches here at the Rebellion, like we encourage them to create their own brand. As a matter of fact, we help them develop it, you know, so that they can be a rebel, right? And they can be a squadron leader as a coach inside of our Rebellion, but they can be Chris Watson, the storyteller. Right, they can be Joy Hewitt Carvajal, the ambassador of the Rebellion. Right, they can be Paul Castaneda, the director of the Rebellion. That once we build a persona around them, and once we create a brand for them specifically, now people are doing business with David Weiss, the mad scientist of the Rebellion, or Jack Wilson, the Sons of Sales. Right? And once we start to create that synergy with people, once we start to build on that perspective that we are accommodating our buyer, right? By allowing them to come and dig deep with the people that are here inside of this Rebellion and not just the organization that's going to make you a lot of money. You know, then we become dangerous, as my friend Dusty Rollins likes to say. Mm. And we become dangerous because we teach you how to love yourself and we teach you how to meet people where they are and love them just the same. And we teach you how to have a foundation for your sales career that is based around something that is a lot more emotional in context than it is physical in regards to stuff and things, right? Quote unquote, the money, right? The big time, right? I'm going to grind for 2 years and then I'm going to start making six figures. You can make six figures tomorrow if your mindset's in the right place, if you're at the right organization, and if you can actually believe in yourself as a salesperson. Now, because I did it overnight. I went from my father's firm, digging them out of debt. You know, my dad went through 2007 and 2008 like a real champ. You know, he made sure that people were taken care of. And so he lost a lot of money and we were in a lot of debt. We were eating hot dogs at the gas station for lunch some days, right? On a credit card that was full of money. So we lived that life. But as soon as he had sold the business, you know, I was making $20,000 commission checks before you could even blink. And because we didn't have debt that we had to pay off. We didn't have all these things that were hindering me and keeping me from doing those things. But I had also built and established the credibility, the rapport, and the community around me that is much needed for salespeople.
Mm. So there's two things I like to explore. One is people like, sales entrepreneurs, salespeople, they like to talk about, they'll like to ask about, you know, what kind of new tips or new tactics out there. But we both know, like, sometimes it's not about what you're doing. It's actually what about what you're not doing and maybe some of the stuff you should stop doing or do less of. So in your observation, in your opinion, what do you see people doing that they should spend less time doing and some stuff that they should stop doing altogether that is sort of hindering their you know, the sales process, hindering their relationship with their customers, and their growth as individual?
Yeah, one of the things I think that salespeople do too often is that they seek out instant gratification. That even like when they prospect and they find somebody that says, yeah, I'm interested, suddenly it's like game on. And it's like, how fast can I rush this person to the finish line so that I can get it done and get onto the next one? You know, there's an excitement. But there's also like a feeling of being lost as well too in those moments, which is why they seek out that instant gratification, because they're not getting anything. And you know, they're questioning like, am I good enough to do this? Am I, you know, how do I see results? I'm not, because I'm not seeing anything. What am I doing wrong? They question themselves too much. But that's the principle of knowing thyself as well, alongside of, you know, not seeking instant gratification, but also the principle of understanding who you are more than anything. Because if you're comfortable in your own skin and you understand your weaknesses, your strengths, you believe in you, you know that you're the best copier salesperson. That's what I used to say to myself. I'm going to be the best copier salesperson in my entire marketplace. Matter of fact, there was days when I woke up and said I was going to be the best copier salesperson in the world. And so to do those things, when you have a mindset like that, to do those things, it becomes much different than everybody else. You don't seek something right then and there in that moment. You understand that you're building something. Right? You understand that, and then you understand that perfection takes time as well too. And that it's beyond anything that you can ever control in the first place. And so salespeople have to stop seeking to control the uncontrollable to get some kind of instant gratification. And they have to know thyself more than anything. I would also say too that salespeople looking for the right script or a new email template, or, you know, you're lost. Anybody listening to this that feels that way, you're lost. All you need is your authentic self more than anything else. All you need is to understand the basics of human psychology, the emotion that the prospect is feeling. To me, business, the word business, it's a cop-out. That's all it is. It's an excuse and a reason for people to hide who they truly are because they're afraid of who they are in the first place. You know, instead they're business today. You know, I'm all business. Right. Well, guess what? Like, the money I make in business pays for my personal lifestyle. Right. And I've connected those things and I've decided that business is personal. And because I take it that way, I have a different outcome.
Got it. So it's really one of the points you brought up is also like separating the detachment from outcome. Right.
100%. You cannot get too emotionally involved.
And people feel it. I mean, for sure. They feel like, oh, this person is out for my, this person's out for my, out for a paycheck or a commission check. And they're just trying to do it, say anything they can possibly say just to get them to hand over some money. And
right.
It doesn't work. So you brought up a good point about the emotional side of things, also like the psychological side of things. And something I personally notice is, let's just say an example of, you know, using social media, LinkedIn, any other social media channels. And a lot of times you get these messages from people that they're canned or scripted, and they're really long paragraphs with a link in there. And I don't even bother looking at it, because if they're going to send something like that, you can imagine what kind of interaction you'll have with them if you actually go and sit down for a phone call with them. So what kind of I always tell people, it's like, to start a conversation rather than try to convert someone into getting on the phone with you on the first, you know, on the first touch point. So getting a little bit more tactical is, what would be a more appropriate way to build up a genuine relationship with someone, and really understanding that psychology of what would make a customer feel heard and understood?
Yeah. So, you know, cause I want to clarify too around, you know, not getting too emotionally involved. The thing is that, like, that's a statement around the concept of you worrying too much, right? Or you thinking that am I doing something wrong? It's an emotion, because we as emotional beings and creatures in general, we tend to head to negativity inside of emotion, right? Well, the ones that we need to stick to are love and understanding and belief and hope. You know, when we have that emotion instead, it's a whole different outcome to begin with. And so an emotion also creates a relationship. If we stir curiosity, which is a very important emotion that none of us do in the sales world. I mean, I'm not guilty of it anymore, but I was for a long time. If you looked at the way that I was presenting myself to people, the way that I was handling a first touch, you know, on a cold call, you would say that I wasn't causing any kind of curiosity. And I woke myself up one day and said, well, why would people even care? If there's no curiosity in the first place, why would people even care to do business with me, to care to learn more? What's so curious about me? I'm the same as these other 20 people calling them, right? Even if they're in a different industry, doesn't matter. I've been lumped into the salesperson mindset, right? So building a relationship starts with causing curiosity. It starts with interrupting the typical pattern of the daily grind that person goes through as well too. And then also this idea of being proactive inside of your sales pitch instead of reactive. You know, if you call somebody and you say, hey, I'm with this company and I sell this product and I was wondering if you were looking for these services, and they say no, and you do that call 50 more times and they say no, but thanks, and hang up. That's a reactive sales pitch, essentially. Like that's how you feel comfortable saying it that way. And so you're saying it that way. But the idea is to get uncomfortable and risk in those first conversations, because risk bears reward. And being uncomfortable is what truly pulls you out of your shell and into your more authentic self, because your shell is where you hide. It's your safe place, right?
Yeah.
Your authentic self doesn't live there, bro. It doesn't at all. It's in a completely different place where you can connect with the things that you truly do enjoy and that you want for your life, not the safety that you live within, right? Getting yourself in that uncomfortable place will work wonders. And it does for your prospect too. They're attracted to that. They see more than a salesperson. They see somebody that can help them to be a better person themselves. So they see somebody that can help them to stop hating salespeople in the first place, right? Like, oh, this is nice. I could actually like this person. There's a consistency across the board with businesses, 90% of them across the world. If you ask them, like, what's your biggest problem that you have in your business? They'll tell you sales. They're up, they're down. I can't understand how to get these millennials or these Gen Zers to stay, you know, retention problems, right? You know, at the end of the day, sure, like you could blame a lot of that on the market and your competition and this and that. But you know, when everybody looks at their numbers and they're, you know, for 3 years they're up 12%, those same people that are up 12% are still looking for sales training, right? They're still looking for better people to come into their organization because they're not at a place that they want to be, even when they're up in the first place, right? You'll sit down with a manager and they'll be like, yeah, I mean, my top guy or my top girl is awesome. They're doing all these great things, and when you say, but, you null and void everything in the first place. And every leader out there that's listening to this has experienced it. You know, like I even am guilty of it. I experienced it a little bit with some of my teams, and I had to teach myself to stop saying, but, and to adapt to those people and to understand that sales is a bigger beast than we make it in the first place, right? That it has a lot more to do with the people that represent us and the emotion of the buyer, right? Like where the roots of the people that represent us, where do they come from? What do they believe in? What is it? What is their sales foundation built on? Right? Is it used car sales, or is it a legacy that their father built for them around community and relationships? So, you know, building relationships, you know, to your question and to my point here, it's simple. Basic communication is simple. Basic communication isn't, hello, I hope you and your family are well during this time. That's not basic communication. Who do you talk to like that? Who welcomes and is warm toward a conversation that starts like that in the first place? It's fake. That's what most of the communication that we perform as salespeople is. It's all fake. You know, I say, what's up? What's up, dude? So why wouldn't I say that in a sales environment? Oh, because it's not professional. Well, then don't do business with me, right? Because if you can't believe in who I am and you can't buy into Dale Dupree, then I can't give you everything that you desire in regards to excellence, because that's what I believe in. Yeah. I believe in excellence, and I believe that giving my whole and heavy heart, right, is the thing that's going to give you the best outcome more than anything. Because I do care, right? Even though I do, I preach, I say that nobody cares as much as you. That's one of my favorite sayings. One of my mentors used to say it all the time. Nobody cares as much as you. I started adding to that and saying, except for me. And I changed my mindset that, yeah, like nobody cares as much as me about you and about the community and about the sale, you know, like nobody cares as much as me, right? Well, that's the point. Like, show people you care. It's not a self-centered statement. It's this idea of that if we can think bigger about that statement, like, hey, listen, nobody cares as much as you, should show people how much you care so that they'll buy in too and they'll care just as much. That's the perspective that people need to have around building relationships and selling sales.
That's gold, because just having that mindset, like nobody cares as much about your company's well-being, you know, in a particular perspective than I do, like for whatever it is that you're serving them for. And like you said, if you show them that you care enough about them and your company in that way, then that would essentially transfer over to them, and then they start caring about, you know, that part of it in that way as well, and then start to have a transact not transact with you, but like to potentially work with you. Now, having said that, I mean, we did, you know, there was a lot of things mentioned. And one of the things, like you, one of the first things you mentioned to answer the last question was about curiosity and also disrupting the flow of their, you know, the regular day. And of course, like, you know, breaking their preoccupation. So what are some sort of tangible ways that those listening can sort of employ or explore when it comes to crafting or creating sort of curiosity and also disrupting that thought in, you know, their normal day? And I know that you have us, I've seen some, you know, something on called the crumpled letter, right? Yeah. Tell us, you can also tell us about that and, sure. And how everyone listening can craft their own unique way of incorporating something like that. Not necessarily that itself, but, you know, along those lines into their own business process, their own sales process.
For sure. So we believe in experiential sales at the Sales Rebellion. Think of Disney World, right? Yeah. But in the sales world is the idea. The sales world is consisted of, when you think of tools in the sales world, you think of weapons, let's say it that way. You think of a pen and a contract, right? You think of a brochure, a white paper. You think of a sales proposal. You know, you maybe even think of us, we call them site sellers, you know, notebooks that you carry in, like, as your weapon, right? Well, I think all those things are the opposite of weapons, right? I think that all those things, for the most part, they have nothing to do with what the prospect truly wants in the first place. Sure, the brochure might say a few things and you can walk people through it because you're the expert. But do people want to know so much about the widget as much as they want to understand whether or not it can actually help them? That's my question. I sold a boring commodity. Right. And I turned it into gold, right? Black gold is what we used to say because toner was black, right? Like, it's like my favorite thing to say, black gold. But, you know, I turned those things
like oil,
you know,
right?
Exactly. Except for toner, not, you know, oil industry. That sucks. I would have hated to have been in the oil industry ever in my life. We won't go there. We won't get political, but I got an opinion on that one for sure. But the idea being that we were connecting the copy machine to somebody's very existence through experiential sales concepts and techniques. And so we were showing people videos of, you know, people getting toner all over themselves and saying, like, why does this always happen? And people waiting on hold for 7 days, you know, to get a sales representative or a service tech on the phone. And, you know, so the 1-800 number concept, which so many copier companies go with instead of a direct dial to somebody that can serve you immediately. Right. Yeah. This idea also of, you know, trying to use technology and utilize it to the best of your ability, to the point that, you know, the machine itself has thousands of things that it can do. And people only do 4 things. They copy, they print, they scan, or they fax, right? But it has so many features to it. It's the concept of, even like, you get a phone and you don't use all the things on your phone, all the apps, all the different productive concepts around it. So it was this idea of saying, of recognizing those things and saying, like, people don't care about any of this stuff. What they care about is the fact that on Friday at 3:30, it's starting to jam and it won't stop. And I want to go home at 5 and I've got to finish this stuff before the end of today. Right. And so I'm calling your tech and he's going, sorry, I can't be there till Monday. And now it's a problem. And so we were taking those pains. We like to call it illness inside of the rebellion. And we were taking those illnesses and we were holistically mending them through curiosity, through the concept of experiential sales techniques. So getting people curious about, I wonder how these people fix this problem. Instead of digging our fingers into the wound and saying, hey, you know, is this it? Does this hurt? I can fix this, right? We were just simply causing them to take the first steps more so than ourselves. So sometimes too, like, you still, like, if you, for example, like you were talking about, if we send a crumpled letter, and if anybody wants to see it, it's just crumpledletter.com. You can actually get a free version of it. And if you keep going, we have an entire campaign, the Rebel Letter campaign, where we've got 5 total letters. It's a full cadence, right? And so our students use it, for example, the first week they'll send it out, follow up with an email, set a phone call. If they don't hear anything, they don't hear anything. And then, you know, within the next week to 2 weeks, they send another one and it's a different version. So we got the coffee stained, we got the pre-burnt, we got the letter traveled around the world. Right? There's these different versions. They speak to your prospect. They're about the prospect being too busy and never being able to find time to meet with a salesperson. They're about all the sales and marketing garbage that comes across the desk and how it's trash anyway. And so we pre-crumpled this letter so you make it easier for you to throw it away. and we speak through relevance and familiarity in those moments. And that's what causes more impact and curiosity in the prospect, where they sit back and they go, you're right. This is it. Instead of saying we can save you money and our widget is so much better than everybody else's, we say you hate it when salespeople blow your phone up, right? You hate all the marketing that comes across your desk because it sucks, right? Except for the Dollar Shave Club commercial. That's the only exception, right? Then we relate to the prospect in those moments, and that's how you build familiarity, which creates relevance, which creates trust, right? Over time, that's what that is at its core. That's the psychology of it. So we would tell people, you know, that are listening to this, we would say, find your experiential sales process. You know, we have a repair brick in the copier world. We use it for all industries though, as well too, where we take a brick, little foam brick to the prospect with an instruction manual, shows them how to throw the brick at the product that they're feeling frustrated over, and then call them afterwards and maybe we can help you fix it, right? Yeah, that there it's fun.
Oh, so you shipped them a brick.
Yeah. When I was the copier warrior, the brick was, we called it, you know, the trump card. You know, it was a one hitter quitter, dude. You didn't have to do anything else after that. You took a little comic strip of some guy with a flaming brick throwing it at a copy machine, and every single person can relate to that that's ever had to deal with the copier. Gosh, this thing frustrates me. And so we built that relevance and curiosity. This is hilarious. This is curious. I want to learn more about what you do. We didn't go in gunslinging saying, we sell copiers. Let me see your leases. Let me see your money. You know, we were going and saying, how do we build a relationship here? Well, we do it by causing that curiosity and creating the things that we just discussed just now around the emotional context of the way that you look at me as a salesperson.
So basically you're flipping the script and you're throwing a bait out there, and you have, of course you have a call to action, but it's like they don't have to do anything with it. They can just leave it. They can just leave the letter, or they can leave the brick and not do anything with it, but they could have a look at it, examine, you know, like, oh, this is something that I experience. And I'm curious, like, how do these guys solve this issue? And there's probably, you know, your link and all of that stuff, your phone number. And then, you know, they give you a call and they say, hey, I received this right. brick in the mail. You know, how can you help me with this problem? Yeah. And so you're essentially, it becomes more of like inbound process, but you're also doing like outbound, right? So yeah, that's fine. Interesting. Are you familiar with Stu Hynek?
Oh yeah. He's one of my silent mentors, as we like to call it, you know, and I think more people have silent mentors than they realize too, you know, where they look up to somebody from a distance. You know, like for me, it was guys like Stu Hynek, it was basketball players. And cause I was a basketball, I played basketball as a sports guy, you know, so, but Stu was a great dude I read his book back when I was a kid, basically, you know, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. And I thought, well, this is genius. He actually was one of the people that spawned my concept around, which I'm on one of his podcast episodes, actually. It's cool to see things come full circle like that too, right? He spawned the idea of me creating 6-foot cardboard cutouts of myself and dropping them off for people. And basically, like, I was pulling a sword out of a golden copier in the middle of the woods. And it said every day he wakes up believing this is his job. And people would get that for me instead of a cold call. And look, like, not, this is the thing that I want everybody listening to understand, is this is not a silver bullet. And this does not guarantee you a sale. And it doesn't guarantee that the prospect will even call you. It's like you were saying, it's outbound activity that causes inbound as well too. But the inbound is still scarce because, look, people are busy. And you sell a commodity most likely if you're in B2B. Because of that, you're not, people don't take it that seriously. The whole office though knows who you are after you drop that 6-foot cardboard cutout out. The whole office.
Yeah. And it's probably like sitting somewhere on someone's desk. And then eventually they're going to be like, okay, you know what? Let me just give this person a call and see what it's about. Otherwise, I'm just
right. And, you know, and if they don't, you just call them. And we had a fun call to action because we would say, you know, hey, if you don't want to meet, like, at least just have your receptionist call me, or your, you know, your personal assistant call me, so I can come and pick up the cardboard cutout because it costs me a lot of money and I'll use it on somebody else.
So they usually call you back or
just, sometimes and sometimes, you know, not, but you know, regardless, you made an impression at that point. So
yeah, that's brilliant. You know, just and just like, again, like you said, it triggers that emotional response. They're intrigued, they're entertained, they're curious, and then now they're in a position to go and potentially reach back out to you. So in closing, you know, if you for those listening, they're probably thinking, oh, this seems a bit, you know, might seem a bit advanced. You know, they haven't, maybe they may have not heard of this concept before, of, you know, reaching out to sending out these kind of like mailers that are, you know, that take some creativity to come up with. Of course, what would be a piece of advice you can leave them with that can get them started on this journey of revitalizing their company and their sales process?
Really, I mean, I would just tell people to understand that what the rebellion truly is that we're not a company, we're not a sales training and development firm like the traditional one. We believe in the success of all inside sales, outside reps, you know, so street reps, BDRs, you know, we believe in everybody's success. And what we encourage people to do more so than, you know, come and buy my course and learn how to do it like us is to join our community, because we exist to tear down castles, which you have built to keep people out, and instead to build a kingdom with one where we all thrive, with people of all shapes and sizes and colors, an inclusive one, right? We've created so much exclusivity inside of the sales bullpen. We say that these are the top two reps and no one will ever touch them, right? We set up so many stereotypes inside of the bullpen as well too. We continue to just poke the bear about them as well, instead of overcoming them, right? You know, we continue to take a hard stance on things that suck and that don't have the type of outlook and the type of focus that they need to have in the first place, that translates something better, something more beneficial, something that truly accommodates not just the buyer, but the seller as well. You know, and so we encourage and we challenge people to lead their own rebellion, and with the guise of understanding what hope truly is. It's not just a word. It's not just an imaginary thing. It's not just a thought. It's an action is what it is, more than anything. Just like a rebellion is not something necessarily built on pitchforks and flaming torches, right? A rebellion is built on that same hope, on the idea that we can have something better, not just for ourselves, but for the people around us that we exist with. Life is done better with others is the bottom line. It's why most people have a significant other. That's why a majority of people have some type of family tree, right? It's how you came into existence, right? So the concept that we've gotten away from is just that. We get in an elevator, we don't say hello. We walk down the street, we don't wave. You know, we are so confined to ourselves these days. We don't think big, and that's the problem. You know, so the principles of the Sales Rebellion is that we believe in people over products. We believe in fellowship over negotiations. We believe in the concept of giving experiences like we just discussed instead of performing a pitch. And most importantly, we believe that sales reps have the ability and the opportunity on a daily basis to choose legendary and affect change bigger than just a sale and all of those that they come into contact with. And so I would encourage everybody listening right now to take those principles and join the rebellion.
Awesome, man. I love that. that is such a compelling it's like a mini speech there, but then that's awesome. Thanks, man. It's like a rallying cry. So for those that want to join the rebellion, want to follow you, where's the best way to get in touch? Of course, I'll have some of the links in the show notes. Where's the best way they can, you know, hearing this, they can get in touch?
Yeah, so they can head to salesrebellion.com. You can find everything there. We're revamping the website right now so you can have more access to coaches and find us a little bit easier as well too. You can actually find my cell phone on there right now if you look really hard. But they can also go to linkedin.com/IN/copywarrior to see daily content put out by me. Any of the social channels, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, @SalesRebellion. I'm even on Snapchat and TikTok if you want to try and come and find me. But anywhere that you can find, you know, other than Medium, even actually I have a Medium too. I'm anywhere and everywhere, bro. Just Google Dale Dupree and you'll find me.
Awesome. Well, there you have it. Dale Dupree, from the leader of the Sales Rebellion. Jordan, folks. So thank you for coming on the show, Dale. It's been an honor and I'm really grateful for it.
Appreciate you, bro.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.